started. You're good to go.
Yeah, good to go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, before you to be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening and watching from. And yes, I am laughing because I'm messing up my own intro, but we had a good laugh with this amazing
Did.
guest that I have today. And before I put the spotlight on him, I just want to say, really happy to have him on. He's doing great work. And I'm gonna just already put a plug in, but he has an amazing talk, TEDx talk on the subject, actually putting the human back in IT. And I think I love this concept coming from the IT guy. So I will put the spotlight on you. Thank you so much, Michael. This is Michael Davis. Thank you so much for joining me and coming on today.
Danielle, thank you. This is wonderful to be here. As you know, I'm a fan and I love the work you're doing. And I follow you on LinkedIn. I'm like stalking you, but I appreciate the community between us. We started this conversation laughing, which I loved. To have a friendship and that and this thing is no different. And on the podcast, I'm happy to be here and share my story, but I'm also I'm coming down through a cold. I'm give you some fair warning. So I'm kind of in this stage. I'm just here right now, but I'm present, but I'm also coming out of a cold. So I appreciate your flex in this call in this podcast.
This should be an interesting episode because you're coming out of the cold. I'm going into it, so
Exactly.
we're gonna have
Like a
some
high five in the
sound.
parking lot.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's right.
it really is. Like
Yeah.
I had it, you got it. So I
Yeah. Yeah. So the sound should be interesting. It was just
have to
I
use
got
what
a
AI to modify the sound.
yeah. That's the I love the technology. Before we get started on the topic, because you are going to talk about cyberbullying, and I think that is an extremely, and that's why I was so excited when you reached out, because I'm like, oh, we need to have these conversations a lot more. There's so much to it, and even just when we talked, you added so much that I didn't even think of, and I'm like, wow, yeah. Before we get started on that, can you kind of briefly talk about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, no worries. I appreciate that. So my career in technology started in the Navy. I was in the Navy for 22 years. Joined out of mere curiosity. I wasn't like destined. I didn't know anybody in the military at the time. This is the late 90s, or mid to late 90s. And yeah, I started out with this crazy job called a radio man, which sounded sexy in 95. I was really happy with that term. It made me feel good. I'm a radio man. But that joy and that journey started out with about a year or 4 year contract, but it ended up being 22 years because I just kept having fun. And cybersecurity in the Navy, if you didn't know, is a really it's a defense posture. It's attack and be attacked and all that. It's a really binary approach to leadership, but also it focuses you in a different caliber of human when you're using when you're in the military kind of construct. And so I retired, worked at corporate Boeing, and later moved to New Mexico and worked at Los Alamos National Laboratory for about a year before I started this company in 2017. Merrick Security Solutions, my firm, started out with a question. It started out with who am I in the tech? And I didn't really know. I had a wealth of information on my resume. I had a wealth of information you could read about, and it felt good to have that packaging. But I still didn't find the version of me that was there. And I say that, and I've said this a couple of times on different podcasts, but there's a play factor that we've forgotten in the space of adulting, paying bills and putting gas in the car. And I think I was just so caught up in that binary space that I didn't see myself in that until I r really rose to the joy of being an entrepreneur, but also leading a different type of language around technology. And that's what's happened. We see cybersecurity through a different lens in this firm. We see cybersecurity through a psychology lens, more specifically a cyber psychology lens. And so that's where we are focusing our efforts. We focus on young folks and adults, of course, but we look at risk management through a lens that focuses on the behavior versus the kind of thing that you've done. Cybersecurity, if you didn't know, is a white coat syndrome job. I'm the guy who says, "Why'd you click on that link? Why'd you do that? What were you thinking?" And you're fired. That language is not healthy, and it encourages everyone to have shame around their behavior versus understanding why they did a thing. So we kind of use this language of cyber psychology. It starts with why, And we try to start with our best kind of efforts of what's happening in your life, other than you showed up to work on the 7:30 and clicked the wrong button. We want to understand, really to defeat risk, to understand risk, to mitigate risk, we need to understand the human first. And cyberbullying is a part of that. And of course, how we interact with technology is the major source of all of that. So our work is incredible, incredibly fun. It's exciting. And I'm happy to be a part of it.
Oh, that's good. That's a term that I like that you use, is the cyber psychology. It kind of holds us accountable.
It does.
It does put the human back, because you know that computers don't have psychology, but we do. So
correct.
Yeah, I like the idea of any kind of work, not just, I mean, military or Navy can be a lot, but to say, okay, somebody's having a bad day, what can we do to help them to make sure that we don't make mistakes? Before we get into the work that you do for cyberbullying, why do you think now more than ever we need to be addressing cyberbullying?
It's a great question. We're in this, we're in the throes of social media, we're in the throes of mental health, we're in the throes of like kids killing themselves over a like button or not, or too few likes on a post. So we are finding ourselves more and more attached to technology than the last 5 to 10 years. I mean, we're seeing it now where kids are following these influencers, and there's an imbalance of how they see the world through the lens of an influencer or through the lens of a YouTube channel. And that's not fair to them. And it's not fair for us as practitioners to produce, particularly when it comes to firms, to produce content that doesn't encourage users to be more in their bodies. And I know it sounds a little woo-woo, but we want people, and our firm focuses on this, to be more in their bodies. How do I feel before I get to the device? And right. So it is a mental health crisis that we're dealing with. But I want to be clear, like, it took a long time for everyone in the world to see smoking was bad. There are PSAs, I've Googled PSAs on drunk driving, how that was, if you drink, what, you know, people wanted to drink and drive that. How could you take my rights away? And that was a thing back then, you know, even taking care of your kids. That was a thing. Kids, there are PSAs on how to love your kids, how to touch, you know, show emotion to your kids, because that wasn't a thing for a long time. So at the end of the day, we're in this space now where we're like, oh, social media has been around since 2000, I don't know, 7, 8, at least in terms of MySpace and all that. Yeah. And we're just now talking about mental health. We're just now talking about the impact of a like button and that follower space. So cyberpsychology, this researchable space that measures how we behave and how we attach to technology, good, bad, or otherwise, is more important than ever now, for sure, in that regard.
No, you're so right. And I think it's also, a lot of us are not really paying attention to how we behave online as well, like our behaviors. So we'll get into that as well. But you're right. It's, I like that feel, get into your body in the social setting. Is
seriously.
So important. Yeah, that's so good. What are some, this is the insight that I like from you, what are some of the aspects that, because there's some parents who do want to educate their children on this and, you know, kind of hold them accountable for their behaviors and not get caught up into that wave of let's tease this one person online. Because it's, we kind of forget that it is a human on the other side. Like, oh, this is funny, we're just going to, you know, bash them, but it is a human. So what are some aspects that parents may be overlooking when they are educating their children on cyberbullying?
Yeah, no, it's a really hard question, because what happens in that space when you're bullied, often kids will not talk about it. They'll feel embarrassed or they feel ashamed from that space. Parents need to find a way to get into that space with them. And I know it's challenging because it requires a little bit of a wordplay. For example, instead of asking your kid, how was your day? And any angsty kid in the world is going to be like, it was good. Bye. And they're off to the room. You know, they're not even listening to, you know. And so I think it's important to say, well, maybe third period, who sits in front of you? What were they wearing today? Oh, just get something that shows that you want to be more deeply connected to their life versus the thing that shows up in shame. And online community is even worse, because every text group chat typically has about 2 or 3 other group chats attached to that one group chat. So there's all this chatter that happens. There's so many podcasts and research out there that shows that cyberbullying starts with really text message. It could be simple as like, you suck, or something along those lines. and it just echoes. And the thing that lasts in what our day, particularly our day of, you know, back in the Stone Ages, we didn't have these videos and like showcasing our, and bullying was a physical thing. More or less it happened. Someone shoved you into a locker, whatever that looks like. It wasn't right then either, but at least it was in this sort of silo effect. Now it's perpetuity. It's still out there. The bullying aspect of it happens and 20 years later, people are pulling up documents or photos of you at a frat party when you were, you know, you were 21. So I'm not saying that the cyberbullying is an easy fix, but there has to be a language for parents to echo, to get into their kids' heads, where they don't feel like they're intrusive, but they actually care in a way that embodies the trust that a kid can have for you know, within that space. Angsty or not, it's important to break the barrier. And it's hard. And every parent that I've talked to about this, they say it's hard. It's not easy just to come in and ask a question around what's happening online. But when kids are getting phones at the earlier age, put provisions in place. Have a monitoring software on the phone. So when the kid texts something, you get a response on your phone just to see the transaction. I think that's the problem, is that the rite of passage that we are talking about in life doesn't happen with technology. We just give a kid a phone. And there's no like, okay, here's the steps to earn our trust that you can handle the phone. In the meantime, but ideally what you want to do is give a kid a phone and say, here are the restrictions. You have the phone, but we're going to see everything. You have the phone, but we can't install apps until we know about that. And then they earn the right over time to like get their phone without less restrictions. And I think that's a healthier approach versus just giving the phone to the kid.
That is so good. Yeah. That is good, because you're right. We don't really think, sometimes we just give a phone thinking they're just going to use it to call and text, but there's so much going on that we are not even aware of.
Correct.
That moderation, I think, is great. That's a good idea.
Definitely helps.
It really does. And I'm going to throw that question in the middle, because I think there's, you know, in the quest to keep everybody accountable, why do schools need to get involved in this as well? Because there's a lot of back and forth with, you know, parents. This is the parents, and I can understand the school side of things, because we can't moderate 300, 500 kids. What's the school's role in this? Yeah.
No, this is a valuable question, and it gets asked all the time. Where are the boundaries between what the schools can control versus the educator, I mean, versus the parent, and of course the students also holding themselves accountable. But in the case of your question, I think if the school has a culture that speaks to autonomy over, or speaks to agency relative to the cell phone use, the cell phone use policy, for example, needs to speak to, like we have certain times of day where we use cell phones. Mm-hmm. This is a cell phone. Like I go to my gym, there's like a cell phone zone where you could talk on the cell phone, not being on the gym space. So they've designated as a culture at the gym, a space where you can go. We're not banning cell phones. We're just saying, if you're going to use your cell phone, go over here. It's no different than a smoking break. I mean, if you want, I don't smoke, but people go outside and smoke. There's like a designated area to smoke. And I think if schools can embody some level of what that looks like, sometimes schools will put like cubby holes, and they put like all cell phones go in the cubby hole. And then from this minute to this minute, you can use your cell phone. So I think access points are helpful, but the school needs to get deeply involved, because what's happening on the back end is that kids are being distracted. They're not going to be enticed to learn because they're going to be on their devices. Now, my demographic where we work are 6 to 10 year olds. So there really aren't a lot of huge cell phones being integrated into a second grade class. But I think the high schools where this question references is where kids are on their cell phones, and they're 16 or 17 years old. So there's a real space around how do we handle that at that level. The school has an enormous responsibility. It's a co-creative process with the parents. And then what I've seen in the past, what we're doing with the schools in our pilot program, we're pairing up parents and teachers, and we're getting them more involved. We invite parents to our first day of class relative to intro to cyber psychology. We invite parents to have a one-on-one with me and talk about what their concerns are. And we invite the head of schools to interact with parents. So we just want more involvement, less shame around the conversation, because what we're seeing in many ways that parents also struggle with their own device usage. And so they're less willing to talk about a fix because they're also not exhibiting the best behavior at home with their kids. Mm-hmm. And so schools play a vital role, just as vital role as that, in terms of how we develop a consciousness with kids.
Yeah, that is so true, because especially for home is a lot of the times parents are not willing to face the fact that they may not be modeling the appropriate way to use it. But at schools too, I like the idea of having those designated areas, just like you would smoking. I like that. It gave me a really good picture of that. But also just because a lot of the bullying starts in school, that's where they start getting their social interactions. And so to kind of build that into this, you know, the school culture, like you said, to say, mm-hmm. okay, let's get real about this and what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. I think those are conversations. You mentioned that you do 6 to 8, and I thought that was one of the first questions I had for you when we first started talking, is that if you could talk to us about the program, but specifically why you chose the 6 to 8 year old age group.
Yeah, no, it's actually a really good demographic. We're actually now in the 6 to 10 year old. So we're like first to fifth grade. That's kind of the space. You know, I hate to say it, but they're kind of closer to the abstract than most of us. They're in that really interesting creative space. They're in their imagination a little bit more. And that's where I have really pivoted myself in this role for them, teaching this topic in that really creative abstract space as well. I want them to also continue the why game. And I know parents hate the why game. Why? But I want them to do that. I want them to also focus on their whyness in terms of why they're using, why do I want one more hour? Let's talk about the one more hour tantrum. And so referencing using one more hour on a screen time. But I think ultimately this demographic is just much more tuned in. And I think the language and the curiosity that they exhibit, it just feels more authentic. And I'm not saying that high schoolers don't have that or middle schoolers don't have that. They do have it in their own way, of sure. But we're catching kids before they even touch a device. We're catching kids when they only have one device. We're also catching kids in the first stages of having a YouTube account and being a YouTuber. And so we get to really curate that language in a space that's healing and healthy. And it's not dictating, you know, we're not dictating things to them. We're allowing them to be a part of the conversation. This curriculum is co-creative in that way. I mean, I'm the facilitator, of course, but I'm also opening the floor to my own journey. And I talk to them about my own journey with Instagram and my own problems with social media and my own kind of anxieties around technology. So it's not just a class around cyber ethics. It is a class that focuses in, like, how do we all solve this problem? And the reason this curriculum is so, it's just a robust curriculum because of a number of reasons, but more of the reasons that we don't ask kids nowadays what they want to be when they grow up. That's an outdated question. It doesn't really answer the question, the intentionality of the answer of the question. What we ask kids nowadays, what problem do you want to solve in society? What is the thing that you want to do that's going to help motivate us to the next level of what that looks like, whether it be a dentist or cybersecurity expert or whatever. And so that's where this curriculum focus is intention, is problem solving. But we start here. We start internal and work our way out from there.
Yeah, I like that. I like that question, by the way. It's like, what problem do you want to solve? It's so much better. Yeah. Because then it comes from the heart. It really brings the human out. That's what I like about your approach. You're like, you're putting the human back. You're back in your body. And I like that. And as I know that you've mentioned as well, it's something that opened up my eyes to it as well, is that age group too. You're dealing with kids who were born with a device in their hands and kids mm-hmm. that have never touched it because the parents are very firm on that. So now you really have the two ends of the spectrum and you need to put them together in that program and say, okay, this is, we need to help you stay safe online, and this is how it is. So it must be quite interesting.
It's a delicate balance, Danielle, because, you know, it is a hygiene game. We're kind of in the hygiene game. We're kind of in the, how do we teach kids to wash their hands for 20 seconds with warm, soapy water? You know, how do we teach kids to use technology by having clean ethics and clean values? And that is challenging because we are competing against a massive industry that steals our attention span, and the kind of seductive quality of social media and all the things that come along with that. So, I mean, if we can get past 3 seconds of your attention, we can get in there. If we can't get past 3 seconds, we got to keep trying. But ultimately, that's where we are. And it's a real healthy balance for us as practitioners of this curriculum, but also we recognize the value added. We see it day one, because no other kid that I have interacted with has ever been asked the question, what does technology smell like for you? You know, mm-hmm. Let's talk about your senses, that language. And so it opens up a different caliber of why. Please, kids.
I really like that, bringing the senses. Yeah, I like that. There's something magical about that, I'll just say, because I'm very much into, yeah, let's bring the senses into the learning. So the fact that you're bringing it into something that we see as robots, and, you know, right. I love that approach. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What is your thing? You thought about, you were talking about the adults and the way that they interact with technologies. Why, you know, what should adults be mindful on with their online behavior? Because they're modeling.
No, you're absolutely right. This is the tough part of the curriculum, because I have to include parents clearly. But to be honest, the end user in this space are the kids. They're the ones who get to play and do all these things. But my target audience are the parents, to be honest, and the educators, of course. But the adults, it's a tough journey, because there is a lot of shame there. And I think I want to bring it up because we've seen it in our research. Parents, in the beginning of the curriculum, there was a real disconnect between what parents or kids were seeing online and them talking and interacting with their parents around that discussion. The more we made and destigmatized the kind of language or what they're learning online, what they're seeing online, or their fears or less shame, we saw that gap really decreased. We saw like now they're talking to one another about the things that they're seeing, which is all we wanted to happen. But what we learned in that is that the parents also are having a sort of a confessional around their own usage. And so, as I mentioned earlier, there is embarrassment there, because if your mom's always on Instagram, if your dad's always on Twitter or whatever that looks like, and now they're telling you to be off of that, you know, and there's like this interesting, because I said so mindset. That can be challenging to convince a kid that the internet's, you know, needs to be used in moderation. And I think that's what we're talking about, is that there needs to be a co-creative balance between all this trifecta between kids, parents, and the school system, that all agree that moderation is key. And it's okay to use, we're not shooting for abstinence, but parents also need to allow for some space in their home and in their life to talk about it. Let's talk about the weird thing in the room. And that is usually our technology usage. So.
Yeah, that's so important. It's with the research saying it, how much time adults are spending on their phone. And that's outside of work hours. So some people work from their phone, but there is a lot of work to be done there. And I think working with the adults may be a bit more challenging than it is working with the kids sometimes.
I mean, surprisingly, there is a Mindful Bites for adults in our business that we kind of created for the adults in the room. And we're kind of piloting that too. As a cybersecurity risk management firm, we are entirely focused on trying to mitigate risk for our clients. And so, yeah, we do play with that, but it hasn't really stuck the way we wanted to stick, as you can imagine. So I can talk to another, you know, a CISO of a company or somebody and say, hey, are you breathing? And they'll say, yes, but can we continue down? Can we get this done? And so I never get a chance to really wrangle them in because there's so much anxiety at that level.
I can imagine, that's quite the challenge.
Yeah, it's tough, but we're gonna keep trying. So.
Yes, well, let's take baby steps, right? You will eventually get through. It's
seriously.
It's like you said, as those public announcements. There's like, yeah, you might
No.
not want to drink and drive. You might, you might want to check how long you're
Seriously.
on. Yeah.
I
Start slowly. It's
mean,
10 p.m. Do you know where your children are? It's that kind
100%,
of
100%. And it's a shame that we have, I literally went back to a YouTube rabbit hole looking at old PSAs like that. And it was a real effort. A lot of money went to those PSAs to showcase the dangers of this and the dangers of that, which today we're like, well, obviously, you don't want to, but back, we're
Yeah.
smoking in planes and like smoking in bars. I mean, it was a whole other world back then.
Yeah.
It was normalized. I remember
Yeah.
going to the store as a kid and getting those cigarette gum things.
Yes.
I
Yeah.
cannot believe you. And parents are like, oh, that's normal. You're
Yeah.
having a cigarette and you're going to chew it up later after you smoke for a couple minutes. It's like you're 7. What are you doing? So, yeah,
That
but
was
that was normalized. That
the candy you would get when you had a little bit
was
of change. Yes.
the
And
candy.
you just pretend that, and the little what are those, the little guns that had the paper,
Yeah.
just kind of, oh my, I can still smell that.
They
Yeah,
didn't
we
have
would.
they had the chewing tobacco gum that you could take and like stick it in your mouth and like let it sit there for a while, like you're chewing tobacco and you're 9. I mean, come on. So yeah. So I think you and I will probably be around in about 20, 30 years. We'll look back and be like, oh wow, remember we were just like stuck on social media and all these things and like we had to have PSAs and I have to create a company to talk about the dangers of that. And I don't know where we're going. I'm a little concerned, but I do recognize that we are, yeah, here
Yeah.
we are. So
That's why it's important to have these conversations for people to
it
realize it
is
is something we need to be concerned about. These are our babies' lives, that are at
100%.
stake for something that, virtual. It's not even tangible. So I like the fact that you're bringing in the senses. How does that smell like? You need to give it something
Ew.
that'll bring us back to say, okay, well, wait a minute. Yeah,
Yeah.
this is real. So I really like that. Is there one thing that, because you've mentioned some of the things that parents could do when they're thinking of giving their child a phone, but is there something that parents could do today? Let's say they're in it right now. What's the one thing that they could do today to kind of help their child to protect themselves when they are in the online space?
Yeah. This is unfortunately is a loaded question because a lot of kids have different access to technology. And I think that's where we struggle the most. Some kids, we learned during COVID that a lot of parents and homes didn't have Wi-Fi, but the assumption is that everyone has Wi-Fi. Or a lot of parents don't have access to like really sit down because they're working two or three jobs to raise 5 kids or whatever that looks like. So I want to be clear in how I address this question, but ultimately you have to talk about the weird thing. And I say that in sort of tongue in cheek, but you got to talk about it, make it, you got to normalize the conversation. And if it comes to the cost of you as a parent expressing your own journey in tech or just having a conversation about vulnerability in tech, I opened my Instagram and someone didn't or disliked my post and like showcase what that feels like in the house. Don't give it a barrier. Don't make it so uncommon. Make it some dark shadow conversation. Make it a real conversation. It's no different than the birds and the bees. Birds and the bees, at one point in time, was sort of taboo to talk about. It was like a taboo topic. And we were whole, as a society, full of shame around sexuality. And I think now we see a different tone on that. I mean, there's much more access now to those information portals, but nonetheless, though, I mean, we could still make this thing about cybersecurity and all the things and technology less of an aggressor. It's so aggressive right now. And I think when we show up in our shame, it makes it worse. And our kids see that. So I think if parents have any insight into their kids' technology use, relate to that, bring your experiences to that space, essentially meet them where they are. And maybe that will open up a door for them to feel comfortable about talking about the weird thing that's happening on the back end of their gaming system, headphone set, or whatever they hear, whatever they are experiencing, text messages or group chats.
Oh, I like that. It kind
Yeah.
of, it's funny that you give the other, in the beginning it'll be awkward, but don't give up. Like, just keep going. It's just like,
Seriously.
like having that conversation with the birds and the bees, and you'd have the kids be like, oh, come on, like, ew,
I
you know. So it'll be the same in the beginning when you start having that conversation. It'll be awkward,
Right.
just yeah.
This
And
is this is no different than any other growing pain as a society that we've experienced. I remember my dad looking at me when I was like, I don't know, 13, and he's like, you stink.
yeah.
Go use deodorant. I'm like, really? I'm at that stage now. I gotta use deodorant. And he was pretty, he's a man of few words. But that was the thing he said to me. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I gotta go out in public now. I can't just be running around smelling like an onion. And
You're
that was
so
my lesson. So, so
amend a few words, but very effective words.
right. It wasn't even a debate about it. Like, go. Bathroom, deodorant. Like, it was just quick and easy decision. So I'm not saying do that with your kids, but your kids are like literally growing into their bodies and they're using digital technology in the same capacity. Like, inquire where they are in that space. Like, where are you in that? What'd you learn today on Instagram? I seen you on Instagram for 7 hours. What'd you learn today? Just it sounds hokey, and you're right. You have to like make it sexy somehow, but there's a way there. And we're working on that. We're working on that language. We're actually working on a whole volume of conversations that you can have with kids that don't make them feel weird. No, don't make you feel weird. And it's a really healthy questionnaire space, but it also opens up the kind of your purpose of why we do a thing. I think that's why we get lost in many ways. Technology, we lose our purpose. And I joke about it in class. I'm like, what do you do if you're going on a YouTube channel looking to bake a cake, and 5 minutes later you're looking at dog videos, and 2 hours later you're looking at airplane videos? Like, what happened between the cake and the dog and the airplane? And that's because I had no purpose. My purpose was lucid. I mean, it was purpose was porous. It didn't feel, it wasn't grounded. And so what we're trying to do is ground ourselves before we go into a thing. Let me ground myself before I check my email. I do it all the time. Even as the head of this company, I get email from my staff or whomever. I ground myself before I respond because I want to make sure that it's my voice, not my anxiety. It's my voice, not my fear, And that's what we're teaching kids, is like, let's just ground yourself before you go into anything digital. And let's talk about that too. So parents need to do the same thing. Have a very open and honest conversation around their usage, but also make it relatable, make it teachable, make it reachable to the kids. And even if it's weird, it'll get better. So
Just make it weird.
make it seriously make it that's my joy. I make it weird first, so I was gonna give that advice. I'm like, that's a Mike Davis thing. I make it weird first, and I come back down to sanity, because ultimately I got to disarm the chaos, and making it weird is a nice way to do that.
That's
But
right. You throw them
yeah,
off a little bit. No, I
you
like
have
that.
to you gotta get yourself like a little red nose and just walk into the room and ask them, like, Patch Adams, what's going on in here? How's your Instagram usage? So, seriously. So I think
Love
that's
that.
what you gotta do. I mean, I could definitely like foreshadow this being a real conversation about making it weird. But ideally though, it needs to come down from some crazy perch to like where the goats can get it, so to speak. So
Oh, that's so no, that's so important. And I like the fact that you're saying, like, coming up with these questions or the conversation openers that
yes.
parents can have. That's
Absolutely.
so important. At least it gives us an idea where to start. Some parents wouldn't even know where to start. Be like,
No.
you good? You know, and then
I
that's it.
know.
Yeah.
Well,
So.
it's true. I mean, there was a time where I remember when I was a kid, my fingers would be able to reprogram the VCR time for my grandmother, because that was the only tech in the house, was the VCR. And so she was excited that I came over, changed the time in the VCR. But nowadays, it's parents don't know what kids are doing on their apps. They don't have any idea what these smartphone technology is showing up. And even when you put things on your, when kids have apps or kids have smartphones, they're completely learning new things every single day. And parents are often feeling like left out of that conversation until they got to take their phone and realize they have 25 more apps than they thought they had, or they have other hidden screens that they know anything about. So it can be challenging. And It can be embarrassing too, but it's definitely challenging for parents to keep up with their kids' sort of educational space around technology.
It is overwhelming, especially if you're in a part of that generation that's just, working on the Atari running,
Seriously,
and
I
then our
know.
kids. I realized that with one of my nephews. He was just like maybe 2, 3 years old, and he was already programming his grandmother's tablet. We're thinking, are we seriously calling the toddler over to help us with this? So
Exactly.
it is scary. So that's I'm glad that you mentioned that so that we could feel normal for parents out there to say, yeah, there's a lot going on.
There is.
Without, invading your child's space is how can we
Right.
have a healthy conversation? And
Right.
so that's so important. What's
Yeah.
coming up for you guys? Anything new coming up? Any projects? Anything you're working on right now?
Yeah, there's a couple things I'm working on. Actually, Harvard has a project has a program, excuse me, called Project Zero. And under the Project Zero umbrella, there's a Center for Digital Thriving that I've been really in sort of comunicado with for the last year or two. So they have a fellowship coming up, and I'm going to apply for that, fingers crossed. And so I'm going to incubate Mindful Bites in that capacity. They focus on adolescents and teenagers in that space. And this is more, again, K-5. So we want to really marry up our programs. And if I can incubate this program with them, that would be wonderful. And also we're functionally expanding our curriculum to different schools this year. Right now we're in 3 schools, but our intention is to really expand about 10 to 15 schools based on the research we've done in the last couple of years. We're primarily in the charter school system and the private school system here in New Mexico and the Montessori school system here as well. So we're just running a pilot. We're in this really baby sort of nascent space, but eventually we're going to grow up and put our big toddler pants on and start walking around. And so this is the part of that. This is that year is going to happen. And we're going to branch out to do some more national coverage. As you can imagine, this is can't be just in a silo. We got to get out of our comfort zone. And so part of doing that is just leveraging more national coverage spaces and things like that. So, but yeah, we're growing and team's expanding. I hired a director of learning recently, and she's on board to really talk about this stuff at the national level. And so we're growing. Yeah, we're pretty excited for this year.
That's exciting. Yeah. And it's so important. So it's nice to see that it's there now. It's time to expand because
I
it does
know.
need to go national. It goes even international. But yeah, this is great. I
Thank
can't
you
wait
so
to
much.
see how
No,
I can't wait to
you
see it
don't worry.
unfold.
You'll be around. I'm gonna spam you with all my updates, so don't you worry.
No, well, I don't know if I should ask that question now because that's a question
Uh-oh.
I promised that little girl that I would ask everybody that question, and you say we shouldn't be asking that question anymore, but I made a promise, so I have to. So my question is, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Of course, you're gonna ask that question.
Yeah,
What do I want
it's
to be?
fun to ask.
I would entertain your question based
Thank
on
you.
the history behind that question and how we formed it. What do I want to be when I grow up? Man. Woo. Anything that involves coffee, I guess.
Yeah. Oh man, you're talking
If
my
coffee's not,
language
if coffee's not involved, I don't want it. I need to it needs to be something that's coffee infused and just once a day, nothing crazy. I'm not gonna overdo it. But I think I want to, I think it's an interesting question, and I would love to be just man, this is a because I'm reason I
It's tough.
hesitate because I'm actually in it right now, and I'm like, well, why would I discredit what I'm doing? But I also recognize I'm in it.
You're in it.
I'm in that space now where I get to really be the crazy uncle who has a lot of things to say. And also, I get to be loose and fancy free. I get to work in a creative, imaginative space. But also, I get to do research and really pull out the hard numbers for white papers. And I get to be like a node connector for my friends, And so that is the caliber of work that I'm seeing. The best compliment I've ever received in my entire life was a friend of mine just recently said, Mike, I can't tell if you're working or playing.
That is the
I'm
best thing ever.
like, oh, Yes, that was beautiful to hear that because, you know, a lot of us are just floating through life. We know what that's like. We float through. But I feel like I'm just blessed to have this journey, and I get to work with incredible minds at this sort of 6 to 10 year old brain space. And so I'm in it already, Danielle.
You're
So
in it. I
I'm in
love
it.
that. That is a great question. That's where you want to be. You want to be in it, and that's a spot that
Right.
you want to be where it's just like it doesn't feel like work. That is the best.
Right.
That is the best place to be. So good for
It's
you. That's
wonderful.
awesome. That's
Thank you.
awesome. I
You've
love asking that question for adults, not for kids, but for adults because you never get the same answer. And like you said, this is the first time I
Yeah.
get somebody who said, "Well, I don't know how to answer it because I'm kind of doing it right now."
I
That's
know. I'm like,
amazing. And
my first response was like some other world where it didn't, I'm like, well, and I just completely dismissed that I'm actually in the thing that I enjoy. But I went to this other space of creating something new. And I lost track of it for like 2.5 milliseconds and realized, nope, Mike, I'm actually where I am. I'm healthy. I'm happy. And my heart is full with this space. So yeah.
that's where you want to be. I love that. I
Thank
really
you.
love that answer.
Yeah.
Now I could talk to you all day, all week about this, but let's wrap it up and say, how can
Yes.
people, if they want to know more about your
Yeah.
programs, whether it's schools, I could see that happening with parent groups as
Yeah.
well and stuff. How can people reach you, follow you, kind of see where you're at with your work as well?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm all over LinkedIn, at least in terms of social media. I'm not on, so find me on LinkedIn, Michael Davis at Merrick, Merek Security Solutions, and mindfulbytes.io, which is our website for our curriculum. That's BYTES, mindfulbytes.io. And yeah, just reach out. Either one of those avenues will get me. And if there's a school who wants to partner with me or our research, or an educator who wants to expand what cyber consciousness looks like in a classroom, let's talk about that. And so I'm really accessible, excuse me. And I really enjoy the work, and I'm going to be doing this for a long time. So you're going to get tired of seeing my work out there, but it's going to happen. So
We can't get tired. This is important work. So no,
thank you.
I appreciate it. And I will add all of that to the description so everybody can have
Thank
access to
you.
it to get a hold of you. And of course, I'll plug in the TEDx talk as well so they can kind
So
of
much.
see you in action as well and how you are in
Oh, I
that
love
space. So
that. Thank you.
thank you so much, Michael. I really appreciate you
Yeah. Of
taking the time to share. And there's so much more
course.
we could talk about, but
I
we'll have you
know.
back on. We'll
Thank
have you
you.
back on another time.
No, this is wonderful, Danielle. You're a
Thank
beautiful
you.
human. I'm so happy to share some space with you. And please keep me posted if anything you need from me out of this journey that we're on. But we're stuck at the hips now, so I appreciate the
Right. We're stuck now.
connection.
I like that. And
Yeah,
it goes right back to you for anything that you need help with. That'll definitely help us. Good work. So it
awesome.
needs to
Thank
get
you.
out there.
Awesome.
Thank
Thank you
you.
so much.
Thank you. And for everybody watching, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to go and check out Michael's work as well. I'll add his links in the description. And until next time, stay safe, stay
Sweet.
awesome, and we'll talk soon.